go back to the setting up of the Federation.
Uh-huh.
And that was done in 1944. The call went out.
Uh-huh.
And at that particular time, I was president of the Mine Workers Union in Nanaimo when the call come. And of course, which I objected to personally, feeling that if it was going to be another communist front, then we wanted no part of it.
Yeah.
But I was sent as a delegate to hold a watch and brief to see what it was. And of course, at that particular time, I was opposed to run for office against Harvey Murphy and was defeated by 4 votes. O'Brien was elected as the president, which more or less gave the fair label stamp on, because he was a CCL director. Now, I could never say that O'Brien was a member of the Communist Party, but I think that they had something on him, and he more or less had to toe the line.
Yeah. Well, they call him a, what do they call him, fellow travelers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
How about Pritchett? Was he,
Pritchett was a member of the Communist Party. The build-up from there was that, the Communists controlled it, because, the executive, Al Pritchett, got the full-time secretary job, and of course, this went on, and the Canadian Congress of Labor at that time did want to clean up this mess, because we had quite a number of the large organizations which were communist controlled, such as the IWA, Mine Mill, UE, were all within our organization. Our Labor Council was controlled by the Communist Party. Ed Leary was the president. John Turner was the secretary. Now, some of these I could not vote whether they were communists, such as John Turner. But at least they went down the line.
Yeah.
Ed O'Leary, there was no question.
What happened when Dan O'Brien became president of the Fed? Did he resign his post immediately?
No.
He was still
The Federation, the president of the Federation has never been a full-time job. The same as it is today, it's more or less of an honorary position. The only full-time job of the Federation was the same as it is today, full-time secretary. And so then, this went along. Of course, it was quite a move within the IWA, what they call the White Bloc, to start to eliminate the communist control of the organization. I mean, it stems back where Pritchett, Dalskog, a lot of these people couldn't even go across the line. They were stopped from going across the line at that particular time. And this White Bloc was becoming pretty powerful, you know, within the organization. I think that...
Within the IWA.
Within the IWA,
I was
speaking, because the IWA... in the days of the old CCL, practically controlled the Federation, because they were the large organization. They seated more delegates, and of course this was one of the problems. And then, of course, when the big move come when Pritchett made the cessation movement from the international, and this is when it all started from there. Of course, by this time, Danny O'Brien was not the regional director of organization for the old CCL.
He got
in trouble. He was up. Them one thing another. see.
Well, tell me, Grant McNeil suggested that management at this time used the dissension within the IWA to agitate for Bill 39. Would you say that management used, say, perhaps?
No argument the guy would give me. I mean, my own
personal
opinion.
But I mean, could management?
I don't want this put in.
No, this won't get down. It's irrelevant.
The thing is, it's irrelevant for this.
Sure.
But the point is, you understand that it has a bearing.
Sure.
On the history of the Federation.
Sure.
And as you go through this, you see, while O'Brien was no longer with the Canadian Congress of Labor, he still retained the presidency of this Federation.
Yeah.
You
sure.
see?
Sure.
And of course, when the split came, he naturally supported Pritchett. And this meant then that we had to get rid of O'Brien. And of course, what happened was that the, and I had to look this one up because I have a bloody thing marked. I guess I've lost them now. I'll be back here for it.
Mm-hmm. Was the White Bloc as active in the Fed as it was in the IWA?
Oh, more in the IWA.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
That was the key to the solution of the problem, I guess, because it had the largest delegation.
Right, because until you cleaned out the the IWA, then you were never going to get control of the Federation, you see, because, and this had quite a bearing on getting control of the Federation and taking it out of the hands, was because when they pulled this cessation movement within the IWA, it threw all the IWA commies or fellow travelers out, you see, and the IWA, in coming back and reorganizing, were able to put in all good people, and so all the delegates were good delegates, so we didn't have, and I was going to get that because it's in here, and I have the bloody thing marked, there's so much stuff, of course this here, you see, is all, in 46 is when the rumor was, you know, of this here. Bill 49 didn't come into being till 1947.
Bill 39,
and yep. This was the first restrictive labor. Then we had the hours of work, a lobby to reduce the hours of work from 48 to 44, to 40.
Yep.
And out of that come this here, and of course there was quite a controversy with the CCF and the Labor Progressive Party at that time, you see, of them, and also the others. Now, Bill 39 didn't come into effect till 1947, you see, and this is the time that O'Brien got in trouble, you see, because it has quite a history to it, you see. When he was picked up, you see, I got a phone call at about 10:30 at night to come down and bail him out of jail, you see. Well, I had no idea what it was about, but Bill 40 to 39 was, we were lobbying at that time, and I thought that the thing was over, this Bill 39, you see, and I went down to get him out of jail, and got into quite an argument with the police officers and one thing or another. And there was a staff sergeant, Dave Shearer, was the death sergeant. And I know him very well. I went to school with him. And he could see I was crazy. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. So he come out, went outside. He said to me, "Say, do you know what this man has been charged with?" No. So, through my head, so I said, "So what?" You know. But anyhow, with that, he come round down from up there. here. I mean, the guy, in my opinion, would be guilty, although he was cleared. He was on the first account, I forget what it was, how many months he got hard labor, but he appealed, and on the appeal, he won the appeal. But in the finding, the old fellow's dead now, he said, while there was some doubt in his mind, he was giving him the benefit of the doubt, you see. He got cleared of that. And of course, then, with all kinds of history, because after that, he was up again for kidnapping.
Kidnapping?
Right.
My goodness.
A smart guy.
Yeah.
Yes, he had a hell of a lot of ability. I never took that away from the guy, you know. But he had that quirk.
Was he married?
Oh, well, again, it has a history, you see, which I would never divulge because
sure.
I had a research job done, not me, but the congressman, and all was quite a story, you see. Well, I had a copy of that. I wouldn't leave it in the office. I had it locked away. And
mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I worked with him because it was anybody's business, you know. But sure. He was married, but he had four children. He come out from the east out here with another one, the move. And then, of course, with this lobby in Victoria, when Harvey Murphy made the statement against Mosier and these people, this again expelled my mill from participating, so that you see, by eliminating this one way or another, we were able to take control of the Federation. That took place when, and it's in here if I can find the goddamn thing, because this is the important part of it.
Yeah.
Is
that first lobby to the cabinet, you say it was in 47, the same year that...
This is when the whole... No, we made presentations on 48-hour or 44 or 40-hour.
You know, before.
But the big lobbies were in 47 against Bill 39, which were combined lobbies.
Yeah.
With the TLC and the old CCL, the Federation, you see. And...
What's this about Harvey Murphy? When he did what? He was expelled, you said?
That's all in here, if I can find it. Labor scores again, Red Elm. Vancouver Labor Council, Commerce Delmont, were told Tuesday night that they have been trying to get thrown out of the CCL, and goes on, you know. Let's see before this one. Because here you see in November, O'Brien quits BC Federation of Labor. This is when O'Brien got out. The next president was Bill Stewart of the Boilermakers.
Yeah.
You got that.
This is November 48.
Yes, yeah. November 48, yeah. You see. Mm-hmm. When he got out, then Bill Stewart, been the first vice president, stepped up into the presidency, you see. Right. So actually in the whole thing of the Federation, was only three presidents from its inception. With Danny O'Brien, Bill Stewart, and then myself. And of course, I was in there for about 5 or 6 years. I haven't got the records on that.
Yeah.
And of course, the reason O'Brien had to get out was because he went with Burchett and these people, and the Federation would support the IWA. And of course, that convention that we had, that's the one I'm looking for,
yeah,
is when we broke the back of the thing. You must have all these anyhow, you know. And the vote was so close, it was 65-66, all in that neighborhood of it, you see. And that's when George Holmes defeated Burchett by one vote, and we got the main job, which was the secretary, you see. Then we got control of the executive. I had the bloody thing right here. I read all these because it's kind of fascinating for me to go over them again, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the records up to the time that we went into the merge and we... in here. Yeah, this is by Jack Webster. Colonist Grip. You want this?
I'd like to have it.
You take this, you see, because the whole thing starts right from here, you see. We were at a banquet speech in Victoria last Thursday. Brought them a resolution of official censure Tuesday by 66 to 55 vote of Vancouver Labour Council. You see?
As then Pichette and who else were censured?
No, Harvey Murphy.
Oh, Harvey Murphy and...
Yes, actions of Harvey Murphy and Hal Pichette. Yeah. Then, you see, they sent out this Bill Mahoney, who is now the director of the steelworkers. You got that. You'll find his name in here. Well, he was sent out for that specific purpose, to organize, to eliminate these people. Mm-hmm. He was sent out here, was out here 2 years. And he worked, him and I worked together, you know. Mm-hmm. I was director of organization at that time. But if you start from here, you'll start from about April of 1448. And this is when it all started.
And that goes right up until...
Until the split in the IWA and the expulsion of them up to the CCL convention where Murphy was thrown out. And right through. This will give you a better history, you see. You know, of how it all started. Had Pichette, in my opinion, never taken, made the move he ever did, then I don't think they'd ever got rid of him. But by the move he made the one false move was when he pulled the cessation movement. Of course, the funny part about this was that the night that this was made, I was going to do a broadcast right after, you see, this here come out. And I was sitting there, you see, and I could hear it coming in about the cessation movement. I was quite interested in. And then waited for Pichette to come out. Because in them days, they didn't do too much this kind of work at Clapper's and that. But it was a cut tape. It wasn't a live one. So the theory was that this was all done, even before the board meeting or anything else. It was all cut and dried. The plate was taped and everything else. Because I was there and went on a 15-minute broadcast right after he'd made the cessation movement on a Sunday night, you see. And of course, this is when it all started. And the Canadian Labour Congress did throw all its resources into this fight because I went on loan to the IWA and took charge of the Vancouver Island, the upper part, because they had no organized, they had nothing. They just took everything out, all the positions, the sub-locals, every union was controlled, so when they took everything out, and they also took the records, and you walk into an office. I went into Duncan's office there in local 180. All that was left in there was a phone and a dirty ashtray. That's all that was in the office when he went. No records, no files, no nothing. And it took organizing to bring it back, and it didn't take too long, actually.
Yeah,
a lot quicker than I thought it would be because it wasn't my first go into this kind of business because United Mine Workers had a split in 1925 with the Mine Workers Union of Canada, which went for about 6 or 7 years before it finally healed and got back together again. And I visioned it would have been a tougher fight, but the mistakes made by the opposing faction protecting these people is what helped by taking the money and putting it into the hands of my mill and all these people.
And this is at this time Harvey Murphy was with the mine mill.
Yeah, they were out of the Congress, so they
were Murphy expelled.
Yeah. We had, I had photostatic copies here of $25,000 checks. I had them all here, and I give them to Steele when they were in the fight with Sudbury. I had them all, you know. Photostatic of the copies where they turned this money over.
When were they expelled, the
minority? Ah, geez, no, it's in here. It was, I think it was 49 or 48 convention. It's in here.
What was the reason given?
Well, they had been expelled once before.
Uh-huh.
I think it was the... there's no argument about that, because, as I said before, the minute that they couldn't seat delegates, that cut it down, you see.
Yeah.
And that's how we got George Jones in by one vote. You see, Murphy was suspended at that time, you see, at this particular convention.
Yeah, otherwise you wouldn't have seen
it. No, we wouldn't have done it. No, we couldn't have done it. Well, I mean, it was 66-65.
Yeah. Well, just briefly, can you could you run over the unions that whose delegates were with you and those who were against? Like, I guess, you had swung the IWA by that time, but the mine mill was still against you.
Well, eventually, the mine mill was thrown out too. You see.
Yeah, sure. Take those 60 votes. 60, you said, to 60?
60, 65 to 66 is what George Holmes got in.
Yeah, what unions were among the 65?
Well, it was pretty well the same ones, only here's what happened, you see. Harvey Murphy couldn't sit there. It says suspension. Harvey Murphy's last year's first vice president and prominent communist labor leader was not eligible for re-election because of his 2-year suspension from the CCL. So he was up, you see, so that would have made it one more. Then, of course, by this time, the IWA, when we say that the IWA controlled them all, it's not true, because New Westminster 357, because here, you see, Fred wasn't in there. He was in the Rogers local. But Stu Aldbury, George Mitchell, and these people, you see, and see, first vice president William Stewart, marine workers and boilermakers, defeated Pem Baskin, steel workers, 66-65, you see. He got the extra vote there. Stewart did. The second vice president, Stuart Aldbury, IWA New Westminster, defeating Alec McKenzie, oil workers, 66-65. It was one vote difference. Now, you see, I run against O'Brien, you see. Hair-to-breath voting marked the fight for all positions. Final lineup of officers was President Danny O'Brien, re-elected, defeating Danny Radford, Regional Director of the CCL, 68-64. You see, there was 4 votes different than that one, you see, because of O'Brien, you see. And when it come down to the others, and then, of course, Secretary George Holmes defeating Prichett, 66-65, by one vote. You see, this was all hinging on this one vote. And, of course...
So then the steel workers...
Yeah.
Communists?
No. Well, they had...
Had enough to vote against you.
The steelworkers had some communists in there. I'm not saying our other locals were clean. You understand what I mean?
Sure.
You maybe had 1 or 2 delegates out of 5 or 6 that went along with the commie slate. You see what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah.
But the big thing here was this was the breaking of the back. Because we got control of the full-time job of secretary, we got control of the executive, you see. Now, then you see Prichett, when he got defeated for the secretary job, he ran for the executive and was elected to the executive, you see. And of course, when he pulled this move, then he was automatically out because it was outside the CCL.
Yeah, Congress is
Of course, then there was a lot of shenanigans in this thing here. I mean, it wasn't all so cut and dried because they wanted to call a meeting, which Holmes and these guys wouldn't go along with. O'Brien and them called a rump meeting, you know.
Yeah.
All these, and it's pretty hard to go into it now, but it was all kinds of...
I got all that from Grant McNeil.
Did you? Oh, well.
But
but could you give me some idea of, say, the strength of the communists in the individual unions? How strong would you say that they were in the steel workers, the mine
mill? Not too strong. But mine mill, well, you see, you got to look at this in this light. That even in the IWA, you understand, it doesn't say that the IWA rank and file were commoners because they were a hell of a long way from it.
Sure.
But they had control. In other words, all of the key jobs in the IWA, Dallas, Chicago, Pritchett, all these people, Nigel Morgan, all these people were commies, and they controlled and somehow kept in the top, you see. And of course, it's like the old saying, they were doing a pretty fair job for the workers. So they could care less whether they're communist or what the hell they are.
Sure.
You understand what I mean? And it's the same way with Harvey Murphy's outfit, you see. And this is what happened, you see. But
on the delegates' level, on the leaders' level, how did you look at that that particular meeting? Were there unions you just couldn't count on, and other unions that you were sure you?
Well, we had one guy that was in our camp was given us a double cross. I'm not going to name names because it ain't going to be fair, but we knew, and this is where this bloody thing was coming up. You see, we had it figured out what we should take these seats by.
Yeah.
We knew that it should be by round two votes. We knew damn well we weren't going to take it by landslide, right? But we had our suspicions of one individual, you understand? So, I mean, in this game, you got to use all kinds of ways and means to find out how the hell who's doing this, you see? We had our suspicions. So the tellers, you see, who collect the ballots, collected this full of glass, it's folded up, but it's right on top. But before dumping them, we grabbed this ballot, and we found out he was the bloody traitor. He was the guy, because we had his ballot. It was supposed to be secret, but it wasn't, because he put it on the top, you see, and the instructions were to watch that ballot. You know, I usually dump them all on the table, but the guy picked it off and dumped, you see. So then, in the interim, it went to this guy. Now, look, you better get in line, you know. You must have told him, we know goddamn well you're not doing right, you see. That guy is still working today, being around here. But you can see what it was like in those days. You go to a convention, hell, you were scared to go to the toilet or something else. You know what I mean? Or somebody had to go to work.
Yeah.
You're afraid of losing one vote. It was, I would say it was right up to that time when, of course, it wasn't till 49. Then we went along, we had not too much problem, you understand, because we did eliminate the vote, and we had a pretty clean organization.
Tell me, to what extent were the other unions that voted under communist leadership? Some were free of communist leadership, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure.
Others weren't. So could you just name a few that were free and others that were...
Well, of course, you see, you didn't have, in the old CCL, well, you had a lot of small locals, you understand what I mean, because we issued charters. We had oil workers. We could produce in the oil workers the biggest bulk for the white bloc, let me put it that way. You could produce them. We knew that there were a few in them. Then you had Vancouver Trunk and Bag. You had the Nanaimo Laundry workers. You had a lot of small locals, you see, that you could rely on. The miners, you could pretty well rely on. That is our local. You know, Nanaimo or Cumberland, no. You understand? Although, you see, you couldn't say there were, everyone was clean. You could maybe have three delegates, you might get one voting for the party, you see.
Yeah.
So you couldn't say even in the steelworkers, because they had people in the steelworkers locals that were voting for the commies, you know, that were not prominent. I mean, it's, you couldn't say, well, this was clean, that was clean, or in the packing house workers, for instance, which we would call a clean local, but some of the locals would elect somebody who would go down the line with for the party, you see. So you couldn't say that, wasn't they were communists, you understand? It wasn't that part at all, but they just thought these were pretty goddamn good guys, you see. So this is the way the whole situation
Could you give me
went.
Some idea now of the positive, rather than this this purge of the communists, some of the positive things that were being done over the years in the BC Fed, this legislative lobby, and your organizational?
Well, I think the positive thing that the Federation did, I think there's a need for a Federation. You see, the Federation performs a function within our trade union setup to bring together, you understand, all people in the province of British Columbia by convention, by year. Now, the Federation has one specific function, and that is the legislative function of the trade union movement. This is the function of the Fed. The Labor Council are different again. They deal strictly with the civic situations in a given area, but the Fed does. Now, to give you some idea of why the Federation serves a very useful purpose, that prior to any federation, each organization would make a separate representation to the government on its own behalf. You see, I used to make representations to the government, the cabinet, on behalf of the miners, and deal strictly with the mines, Coal Mines Regulation Act. The carpenters would make a representation for their union. So each was going there in bits and pieces. Now when the Fed was formed, you coordinated the whole thing. You could go to speak to the government and say, I'm speaking on behalf of 100,000 people. Prior to that, you would go and say, I'm speaking on behalf of 3,000 people. You see? And it carried, in my opinion, more weight. It had the endorsation of a convention. These were passed by convention. Then, of course, you stem to your biannual convention of the Canadian Congress of Labor, which deals primarily on the federal field of presentation to the federal government. And it serves a very useful purpose. I think when a union is in difficulty, in a strike situation, the Federation can coordinate the actions of all locals by sending out appeal. It's endorsed and sent out. So I think it serves a very useful purpose.
Is there
and this was why it was set up, you understand? There was a need for it.
Is there anything in particular that you think is particularly dramatic or interesting that should be included in the history of the BC Federation? From the years, say, 45 to
the merger?
Or
after the merger?
Besides the communist stuff. Any particular highlights in your mind?
Different situations that arose over the years, such as the lobbies to try and stop certain legislation. I don't know if you could call it a highlight or not. I think the big downfall or the thing that really was a detriment to labor was when Bill 39 was first introduced. This was the first shackles that were put on labor, and although we had some of the labor leaders who felt that some of these bills were very good, because I think you have to go back in the history that when they first introduced the first ICNA Act, it gives the right to organize and compel the employer to bargain collectively if you got 51%. Now, a lot of people hail this as a victory. To me, it was never a victory, because the minute that you were granted certain concessions, then you got certain things placed against you. In other words, there were certain things that you had to do because you got this. You had to, you couldn't go on strike when you wanted. You, then of course, while Bill 39 was a bad bill, we hollered about this. The coalition government did set up what was known as the Ash Commission,